welcome to another great episode of the Games in Schools and Libraries podcast, brought to you by the Georgetown County Library System and InverseGenius.com, where you can find other great podcasts like On Board Games, On RPGs, The Room Escape Divas, and hopefully, by the time this comes out, the OMG Cast, which is about miniatures games on minis games. I'm here today, I'm Donald Dennis, and I'm here today with
Stephanie Fry!
And we are going to be talking about big things, big things.
Ooh, yes.
So the first big thing I have to say is I went to Board Game Geek Con, had a lot of fun there, and really did absolutely nothing for the show. I had hoped to meet up with some librarians and teachers and do some recording, but my time was swamped. So instead, we're going to talk about what Stephanie did when I left town. So what'd you do here, Stephanie?
You know, I made a mess, cut up a bunch of cardboards, pulled out some acrylic paints. So what we did is me and the kids got together and we made a giant Catan board.
And by giant, you mean each, normally the Catan hexes are just a couple inches apart in size, maybe two and a half inches, I believe. And yours were much larger.
Oh yeah, they were like...
5 or 6 inches, maybe more?
I think more. They're pretty big.
And... so we had, before we left, we were cleaning out the closet and, you know, doing the annual sort of reorganization of the room. And we had a bunch of boxes for Chromebooks that we weren't going to use anymore. We're like, we don't need to keep these. They're over a year old, so let's get rid of them.
Yep, lots of cardboard, lots of foam.
And the question was, could we do something with it and sort of upcycle them? Is that what that's called?
Doing? I think that's what that is, yeah. Upcycling.
Instead of throwing it away or recycling it. And we said, well, you know, it's a nice white surface because it was white cardboard instead of, you know, the dingy brown cardboard. And your decision was to make a giant Catan set out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And how did that go? Okay. Actually, before we talk about that process, let's talk more about why are big games good for the game room? What does that help us with here?
I think what big games are good at is they're good for spectators. And so... the game gets seen, and people go, what is that? I want to try that.
Right. And, of course, they had big games at the convention. They had a giant Catan set. They had several other games that were oversized. And they had a lot of people who were interested in. Now, some of them had been there year in and year out, you know, every year at the con. So it wasn't new, and they might not have gotten as much time. Or because they didn't have someone there running the game, it wasn't always full. But whenever there was someone there to run the game, I saw them as being full,
mm-hmm.
just very full. So it's eye-catching, it's larger than life, and most importantly, and this is one of the great things that you can do with your library programming, is it's just unusual.
Yeah, and it looks fun.
Yes, and especially with what you did with your set. So you sent me a picture, and there were a bunch of the kids playing, and it was pretty exciting. We may or may not be able to post that here in the show notes.
Oh, that'd be great.
But... you know, how did you get this made? I mean, did you just sit down and churn it all out, or what did you do to make it happen?
So, what I did to make it happen is, first, I didn't want the kids touching X-Acto knives, so I cut all the cardboard myself. That was the big step, and I got some of the volunteers and stuff to help me out with that part. And then what we did is, we basically set out the paint and the paintbrushes and all that, and we would just sort of slowly yank kid by kid, like, hey, you want to help us make this cool thing? And they would go, yeah, sure, that sounds great. Or, you know, I'm not very good at painting. But, and then, you know, as we got more samples, I would show them, well, so-and-so painted this. And they would go, oh, well, if so-and-so painted that and it looks that good, I can do that.
Right. And we played Catan before. And so several of the young patrons in our room were already familiar with the game.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that helped with their excitement level because they played it. They knew it to be sort of an adult game. It wasn't, you know, one of the kids' games that we had, like Dancing Eggs or, you know, we've talked about them on the show, but this is the teen room. So we want the kids to feel challenged a little bit and to get excited. And so they had the ability to say, well, yeah, sure, we're painting and it's arts and crafts time, but we're building something. It's going to a project. And, you know, you knew what you wanted.
Right.
And so you'd say, well, we need a desert, or we need...
Right, and then, so what I would do is I would hand them the colors of paints I wanted them to use so you can tell the tiles and stuff apart. So, you know, I would hand them certain greens for the forests or whatever.
And did you tell them it needs to look like this or that? I see some of them sort of have roads on them or...
Right, yeah, I would hand them what the tiles actually looked like, and a lot of them would kind of try to imitate it or imitate it but go their own way with it. So the other interesting thing that happened, too, is, yes, we did have kids who knew about Catan before, but we also had a bunch of kids who didn't, and so they were actually eager to play Catan afterwards because they had helped make it, which was an interesting sort of...
There were some new faces around that table from Catan, and even some I would have thought would have been too young to really get into it, but, hey, if they're having fun, I guess that's all that really matters.
Yeah.
The other thing is I showed it to the Catan folks at BGGCon because they had a booth there. And, you know, you're like, oh, look, we're not selling this. We did this as an activity. And look, we're using your cards from your game. So blah, blah, blah. And they're like, this is amazing. This is great. Send us the pictures and we will share it on our Facebook page or whatever. And they're very supportive with the idea of folks, you know, not manufacturing and selling, obviously.
Yeah.
But, you know, doing their own crafts project around the whole Catan thing. So I had a few, one of them said, I wish we still had Catan animals because their little stuffed Catanimals would have been really cool on the board, you know.
Catanimals?
Yeah, they had like little sheeps and bricks and wheats that were little stuffed plushies. So, but they don't do that anymore because, I don't know. So that is a very exciting thing. And we also, over the holiday, Target did a big sale on a giant Jumbling Tower or Tumbling Tower, which is basically just big Jenga.
Oh, yeah.
And so it's, yeah, it's a lot bigger than the other one. We can't set it on the table and play it. You have to set it on the floor or on a low coffee table like thing. And we've already had several people playing it because we got it in yesterday. And I turned my back while they were playing it and I heard the loud crash. I was like, oh my gosh. We didn't have anyone get crushed by it. And they're like, no, that's fine. It's not that big of a deal. But it does make quite a spectacle.
Oh, yeah. I'll bet. It's about as big as some of our Minecraft kids.
It is. for our Minecraft Fridays. So I think that... And what are we doing next? We had a couple of games that we thought potentially that we could do large size.
Yeah. I think we were talking about doing a King of Tokyo. But I was looking at... Takenoko would actually be pretty good, too.
Takenoko would be great. That is another hex-based one. In fact, you could almost just put it on the back of the Catan set.
That's a good idea.
Or
although, doesn't it have more tiles?
I don't know. Yes, it probably does. We'd have to find a new way. More resources to do it. We can't recycle everything. You know, but you had a great idea for the King of Tokyo one, which is instead of giving them giant stand-ups to put on it, if we made the tiles out of like carpet or some kind of flooring or whatnot, because really you only have three places that really matter, potentially two or three places that really matter in King of Tokyo, that if instead we made masks or helmets
or little visors,
something that would say, oh look, I am the monster, and we did it that way, which I thought was pretty brilliant. And we could make, they have I think it's a Game Right, I believe, has little card holders that you can stick cards into for smaller hands. We could buy those and use them, or manufacture little ones that look like claws, and that's where you could put the cards that they get when they power up.
That'd be so cute. My God.
Several ways. And of course, this also takes us back to when we did the Pokemon Scramble game, which was essentially a larger-than-life-size version of Going, Gone.
Yep.
And, you know, with some cheating. Thanks, Scott, for not suing. There's a lot to go on here. It'd be neat if we could get a coconuts giant set, but I'm guessing that would be prohibitive.
I don't know. We could do that.
With giant monkeys.
I don't know if we could do the giant monkeys, but we could do it with like slingshots.
Yeah. No, that's not what I want. I want giant monkeys flinging coconuts.
So.
But we'll talk about that later when we review the game. So. if you've done anything with larger than normal games, let us know. I've also seen a couple of ones where the Wizards of the Coast did giant Robo Rally, where it was the floor tiles that you would the foam floor tiles that you would stick together. And this was at a convention, you know, a decade or so back. That was pretty neat.
Huh.
And maybe farther back than that.
That'd be a good way of doing a Suro board.
And I saw the folks who do Suro have a large set that you can rent for events, and they will send it to you. But it's very expensive to have shipped to you because it's easily a 2-foot by 2-foot squares, and they're not insubstantial.
Mm.
So you've got the big plastic mat, which is like a supersized twister kind of board.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of material, and then you've got the tiles, and so it's pretty expensive, but we might be able to make something that's somewhere in between the two.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, let us know in the comments or the Board Game Geek Guild what you think would be great to do a large game of, what you think would be more fun. I mean, heck, you could do a giant telestrations where you had easels around the room, just not facing each other. And instead of passing the easels, you could each move around the room.
Oh, that'd be kind of cool.
And then you could just put the posters up on the wall. Now that I think about all kinds of possibilities here.
Yeah.
As we look at our shelves, think. Now, if only we could do maybe a large size escape the room game. Oh, no, that's a different episode. All right, I think we're done here talking about the big stuff, unless you have any other thoughts.
No, I think that's about...
All right, so to wrap up, whenever you get a bunch of boxes in from Amazon or whatever it is, break them down, paint them up, use them as tiles or whatever in your game. You know, we don't expect these to necessarily last forever, but it was neat to...
Oh, yeah.
...to take what we were going to throw away and turn into a game, which was essentially free because we had all the paint, we had the brushes, we had basically all the materials here. Right. And I'd already bought giant foam dice... Mm-hmm. At the dollar store
that yeah.
I had no use for because I do that.
But they were pretty.
And they work. They work very well for the Catan. Let us know what you all do as far as this kind of stuff, if you do. So, review time. Let's talk about some games that I got when I was at Board Game Geek Con that I think are incredibly suitable for the library. But probably you'll know by the time we're done reviewing them. So, first, let's start with...
Coconuts!
And Coconuts is a game where... What happens?
Well, you basically have little catapults shaped like monkeys, and you're trying to catapult these coconuts into these cups.
Right. It's basically the children's version of Quarters.
Quarters?
Yes. And those of you who don't know what Quarters is, Quarters is a game where... or beer pong, where you are bouncing things and trying to throw them into beer cups.
Oh my god, I had a kid actually ask if... This game was like that game with the cups and whatever. And
it is exactly like that. So, in Coconuts, you are using your little monkey to fling your coconuts into cups. If you land it in a cup, you get the cup, and you are building a tower of cups in front of you. Once you have 6 cups in front of you that your friends haven't stolen, then you win the game. And there are also special power cards, which let you do ridiculous and sundry things, which are not important when you're playing the game the first few times. Play the game until it gets boring. Or until you want a little more, until everybody's comfortable with flinging coconuts, because they're little rubberized coconuts that bounce like crazy.
They do.
And if you have the choice, and I think they make these, get the fluorescent ones if you have beige carpet, like most libraries do.
Yeah.
And so that's it. You can buy the 2-player game, you can buy the 4-player game, or you can do what we do and
Mayfair, turn it into a 6-player game.
Mayfair, or not Mayfair. Mayday Games gave us both the 2-player and the 4-player, so we have a 6-player Coconuts, which is set up right now and is guaranteed to be flinging coconuts all over the front of the teen room. This game is suitable for younger kids. I would say very suitable for ages 6 and up.
Mm-hmm.
You could even do ages 4 and up, probably, just as long as they're old enough to not eat the coconuts, you're doing good.
Right, because I have had kids ask, are these made of chocolate? And I'm just like, no.
They're not made of chocolate, not even remotely, though they do look like they could be either chocolate or monkey poo. So I recommend this game highly. The problem, and I don't know if it's a problem yet, is I don't know how durable the flinging action is on the monkeys or how likely the arms are to break. But they made it back from Texas with me, and they've seen, I'd say, a fair amount of play, and there's no sign of them just sort of randomly giving up.
I think you'll be good as long as you don't have kids trying to fling monkeys off of monkeys.
Yeah, that's not the game. All right. So, for me, I'm going to say in, you know, onboard games fashion, it is a green light. It is sort of exactly what you're expecting from it. It fits in sort of that looping Louie, really sort of fast and furious and fun play where you can have people, you know, take their turns, or you could in theory have everybody, if they had their own color of coconut, do a simultaneous action play game. But you'd want them all to have their own colors of nuts.
Yeah.
All right. And so another Mayday game that they gave me was Garbage Day. Garbage Day is a dexterity game where you are trying to not make cards fall off of the garbage can. And so it comes as a garbage can.
It's so cute.
And there's a limited edition metal one, or there's a standard edition that's just a plastic one. It looks like those cans of green slime or whatever you would get when I was back in the 1900s. And the cards have little holes on them, and what you were doing is you were laying the cards on the garbage can, but you have to be able to see from the holes down to the tabletop. And if you can't see the tabletop, you have to pick it up and replace it. And if it is extended out far enough that cards fall off, those go into your, hey, you're about to be kicked out of the game pile. And basically, you want to be the last person with not being kicked out of the game. Right. So what did you think of this, Stephanie?
It's a fun one. And there are neat ways to sort of wreck other people's rooms by stacking your cards into their rooms so they end up having to be the ones to stack stuff.
Right. Something I didn't mention is each person has their room where you can store up to 10 points worth of cards. And you have the option of putting cards in their room, which may have points on them or may not have points on them. And that that when you get up to 10 points at the end of your turn, you have to put all of those cards on before it's the next person's turn. And that's when you get a lot of stuff falling off the garbage can.
Yep.
There's nothing, I didn't find anything offensive in the theme. It's a great game for kids, is what right. I'm saying. If you don't mind the idea of you're a bunch of guys, or I'm sorry, if you're a bunch of people trying to be the person to not have to take out the trash, then Garbage Day is a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Now, another thing that they gave me with this is there are little play mats instead of just cards that indicate where stuff go. Mm-hmm. So it's like giant mouse pads or good-sized mouse pads that you can stack on. Those don't come with the game, but I would recommend that they do make the game play and explain a little bit easier and let people keep track of, oh, this is in my room versus these are cards that are have a chance of getting me kicked out of the game.
Yeah.
So that's it. That's Garbage Day. For me, just once again, it has one goal. It sets out to do that. It does it, and it's fast, and it's fun, and you will get lots of stand-up moments where people are, you know, being nervous about what they're doing. There's lots of excitement around the game. So for that reason, Garbage Day is a green light for me.
Right. Green light for me, too. It's got the right, like, amount of simplicity while still having some complex strategy to it.
Well, all right. So we've got two games by Friedman Fries. And so the things you need to know about Friedman Fries is that his games are green.
And they start with Fs.
And they start with Fs. So which of the two games would you like to cover first?
Oh, let's start with Fuji Flush.
Okay. So Fuji Flush is it's kind of a game of playing cards with numbers and ganging up on your neighbors. So how does it play?
So the way it plays is each person puts a card down on their turn, and then their card gets discarded if the next person's card is higher than their card.
Right. Now, you can play a card that is lower than one that's already on the table. No penalty for that. But if you play a card that is matching somebody else's card, they add up together, so that might make the total of them higher than somebody else's card, which will then cause them to get rid of it.
Yeah, it's a fun game.
Not all the cards have the same number, or they're not all represented the same number of times in the deck. It's kind of a mean game.
It is. It very much is. I actually brought that one to a family gathering to play.
Did everyone come away with all their fingers still?
They came away with all their fingers.
All right.
I don't think that they like each other anymore, but...
So what we're saying is that this is perfect for your programs at school. Well, maybe not. I've enjoyed it quite a bit. It sort of fits for me in the same place as like No Thanks or Six Nymphed,
yeah,
or other small deck card games where it's full-size cards, but it's not like a giant box. And you've got a lot of play and a lot of replayability, I think. And
while it's still like light and plays quick.
Right. And so Stronghold Games sent this one to me. And so for me, of course, it's Friedman Freeze, so it's got to be a green light, right? Get it? Green, because he's that's all. Never mind. Fuji Flush, I think that it's definitely worth checking out if you're looking for another card game that you can play with any of your family members who just play normal card games.
Right.
If
or, you know, library kids. It's great.
Right. All of that as well. And what was the other one?
Fabled Fruit.
Fabled Fruit. All right. So Fabled Fruit is a game with many animal cards in it where you are trying to make fruit smoothies with the animals help. I don't know. The theme is nonsensical, but why don't you explain how the game plays?
It's smoothies. You gotta get the smoothies. So the way it plays is that everybody's getting fruits and there are locations on the table. Like, you know, maybe you've got a taper that if you discard two pineapples from your hand, you can draw up five cards. You basically just take your piece, move it on a place, either do the action or you buy the location, which gets you a fruit. Or not a fruit, a juice. Whoever gets to the whatever the sort of benchmark is, that will start the end of the game, and whoever's got the most juice at the end of the game wins.
Right. And the way the game plays is whenever you fulfill one juice, which has an animal and a special action on one side of it, you then put another card back into the game. So there's always going to be the same number of cards in the game, but there may be more or less stacks of cards in the game. So the profile of the actions are going to change over time as you go from your first round to your second round. And the whole point of the game is that you can play it multiple times and keep playing it over and over again. So, there are kids arriving here. Hey guys, are there any games, board games or card games that you've played here at the library that you thought were particularly good?
Sheriff of Nottingham.
Sheriff of Nottingham, all right. How about you?
I'll play chess, that's all.
Chess, we got one for this. All right, we're gonna wrap this up. But for me, Fable Fruits, Green Light. I'm liking all these games. I guess that's why I wanted to get the reviews in.
I think so. This one's a green light for me too. I just love the whole Fable aspect and it's a lot of fun.